If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you hear Seth's interviews with Allison Brie and Gina Davis. Both Allison and Gina also take a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. Now let's get to the show.
Our guest is a very talented actress you know from shows like Community and Mad Men. She currently stars in Glow. The third season is streaming now on Netflix. Please welcome back to the show our friend Allison Brie. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
You look fantastic.
Thank you.
A stunning outfit.
Michael and I coordinated the dress code for tonight.
Yes.
So I'm glad that worked out.
She was like, I'm going to go super casual.
And I was like, me too.
Yeah. This is very exciting. You made your directorial debut on the show this year.
Yes.
Which, of course, has all, I would imagine, a ton of challenges, but also you had to direct a baby.
Yes, yes. I feel like the gift of the episode is that I'm not in it really at all, so that was nice to not have to direct myself
Sure.
my first time around. And then the curse was the demon baby that I had to work. I'm joking. Obviously, this baby was not possessed by Satan's spawn. I don't think. No, it was two very sweet twin girls who are 1.5 and I think don't want to be held by strangers and
of course.
Do what they're told.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask.
Around. But they definitely cried through most of the days that we were shooting with them, which you'll see in the episode. Because eventually I was like, it works for the scene. They should be screaming and crying when their mother is holding them.
Yeah.
We did have, two of our girls on the show, Kimmy and Rebecca, who are mothers, are in one scene with her, the little girl, and she's playing a little boy. So, you know, we're progressive.
Yeah.
And we have like a behind the scenes video of them hiding around the hallway corner, trying to coax her. You know, in the show, it just looks like she's like toddling off and then like bopping around the corner. And meanwhile, behind, they were like, come on, we have Cheerios, we have Cheerios, we have candy, we have M&Ms. It worked.
That's good. Anything as a director, anything that works is acceptable.
I agree.
You have to practice wrestling moves. That will not surprise anyone. I do think it was probably surprising to your cat. That
yes.
you would ever use them.
This is a good, to really zoom in on that face. He's like, why? The thing is, this was from season one training. I was so excited about even the smallest things that we would learn, somersaults. And
sure.
obviously, headlocks. And I would get home and try to do them on my husband, Dave.
Yeah.
And he would try to like, fight back and wrestle me. And I'd be like, babe, no. You have to like go. You don't understand how wrestling works. Like, it's a partnership. And like, if I'm going to put you in a headlock, you have to like let me and make me look strong. So I would only do it on the cats, which clearly they're forced to.
Because of all the animals in the world, the cats are the best partners.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know?
They're like, we love to work in concert with humans.
It sounds like you're not a cat person.
I'm not the biggest cat person, yeah.
I am, so.
do strangers, I mean, again, because you are so publicly playing a wrestler. Do strangers ever say, hey, practice moves on me?
You know, the headlock is a popular thing.
That is a thing.
That we get asked to take a photo with someone in a headlock. And at first I was just like, yes, 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 like so fun, photo in a headlock. And then, you know, there's so many things that are quite intimate about even a headlock.
Yeah.
Their head is in your armpit. Their sweaty face is pressed against your breast.
Yeah.
And then I was like, it's mostly men asking.
Yeah.
For the, and then all of a sudden I was like, I don't think I'm going to do those photos anymore.
They were like, this is the dream because she's playing a role.
Hey, I have a great idea just for this photo for fun. Can I put my head right there?
And then you saw, you walked off and then you realized they asked that of anybody, whether they're in GLOW or not.
Yeah, yeah. Saw them with Oprah and was like, what?
This is really cool because I think when you get into acting, you hope certain things will happen, but I don't know if you could have predicted this. You were on the cover of ESPN the magazine with Becky Lynch, who's a professional wrestler. This is a fantastic photo.
Thank you.
It must be cool to have sort of dipped your toe enough into that world for them to want you to be a part of it.
Definitely. It still is, like, mind-boggling to me because growing up, I didn't have an athletic bone in my body. Like, theater sports was the closest that I got. And this show has really, like, gotten me in tune with my body and in a different way. But that day, doing that photo shoot, I definitely was standing there in this ring, like, posing for the cover of ESPN magazine. I was like, my dad is going to be so proud. This is crazy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your husband, Dave Franco, who's another one of our favorites here at the show. He directed a movie this year that you were in.
Yes.
So what is the dynamic like when you're in a film that your spouse is directing?
It is the best.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's the best. He's such a sweet guy and just put everyone at ease on set. But it was a funny, I think we've worked together as actors before, but never in this capacity. It's his first film that he's directed. And so there was a learning curve of like day one, rehearsal one, we're talking about the blocking in a scene. And I was like, honey, do you think I should cross at this time? And then I was like, do you want me to call you Dave on set? When we're around the actors, he was like, could you call me David Franco? I need you to be professional. But we're a real like babe and honey household.
And it's hard to drop out of that.
It was a full babe and honey set.
Okay.
I will tell you.
So it was wonderful to you. Do you think other people enjoyed it as well? Or do you think
Yeah,
when you're in a babe and honey relationship, it's really great. I think that, like, right outside that circle.
It's true. I will talk to some people, like our showrunners on GLOW, and I'll be like, isn't it so weird in a movie when you see someone talking about their husband and they say their name, and they're like, why is that weird? I'm like, because you'll just call them babe or honey, and they're like, no, I call them by their name when I'm speaking to them. And I'm like, not me, baby.
Yeah, not me. You're like, and what's it like to be in a loveless marriage?
Exactly.
Hey, thank you so much for being here. It's always such
Thanks
a delight
for
to see you.
Me.
Allison Brie, everybody. GLOW, streaming on Netflix. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Allison Brie.
Hi.
Allison, thank you for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
The show is so great.
Thank you.
GLOW is awesome. I'm in the middle of season 3. I love it. It's really wonderful. And I'm wondering what your audition for the show was like, because it was such a departure from Mad Men, from Community.
Thank
from
you. Yes, it was a long audition process for me. I auditioned 4 times for the show, and I, you know, in the middle of... I guess the whole time I didn't really realize how much they were adverse to having me on the show.
Really?
I had read the script and was just like, well, it sort of actually drove me, I think, to fight more for the role,
right,
because I wanted a departure. Mm-hmm. And actually even them thinking I wasn't right signaled to me like, this is why this is the role I should be doing. So I auditioned many times and it was a very emotional experience because I can't think of another job that I've wanted so badly. And I really felt more and more like Ruth with every audition. And I would come in and like could feel her desperation like in me. And our showrunners are the best people in the world, but they're pretty silent in a room when you're auditioning for a comedy and you're just getting zero laughs. And then you just do all the scenes one time and they're like, thank you so much. And then I would get into my car and sob and be like, it's not going to happen. And then they'd call me in an hour and be like, great. So can you come back again tomorrow?
You had like no sense of how it was going.
I had no sense. And the weirdest part of it was after auditioning twice, they flew me to Toronto because mm-hmm. Betty Gilpin was shooting a show there and they wanted us to do a chemistry read together, but nobody from our show was there and our casting director wasn't there. So I met Betty Gilpin for the first time in an empty casting office on a Sunday afternoon in Toronto with two like 20-year-old casting assistants who had our casting director on the phone, on speakerphone. And she was like, you guys are great. Just do your thing. Like your instincts are all right on. Have fun. And I looked at Betty and was like, come to the bathroom with me. And we went to the bathroom and then I was like, one of the scenes for the audition was for our chemistry read was the scene at the end of the very first episode where she comes in and we get in a real actual fight that turns into a wrestling match. So I just looked at her and was like, I think we just go for it and let's fully wrestle and you can do anything you want to me. And like, are you in? And she was like, I'm in. And we went back in the room and recorded this audition. It was so crazy. I feel like we wrestled for 10 full minutes. And finally the assistants were like, I think that's good.
And you had no wrestling training at this point. You were just
it was very dangerous. And then we auditioned one more time after that in Los Angeles. They brought Betty to LA. We auditioned one more time and this time with Jesse Peretz, who directed our pilot and directs a lot of the episodes. And, our showrunners, Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch and Jenji Cohen, were all in the room. And this time it was very funny because when we got to that final scene and we started to go into our fight, they were all like, stop.
Please protect
us. We just want to keep you guys safe to do the show.
What is a chemistry read like? Because it's so different from an audition and like it has to be authentic, but also you're performing. So you want to like almost perform authenticity, which must be so strange.
I think that the fun advantage, I guess, was that especially when we met in Toronto, there were no other women. It was just the two of us. So it really felt like, I think it really bonded us actually because you're really in it together. You're like, I want you to be good. So you make me look good and I want to make you look good and we should look good together. So we both get the part. It's not like we were trying.
We were not
working against each other, you know?
Right. And you guys are so great together on the show.
Thank you.
But it's amazing to see Betty Gilpin on the show too. She's extraordinary.
She is extraordinary.
She is so
She's
great.
Like a phenomenon.
Isn't it true that like all of your shows have shot kind of on the same soundstage?
We just shot our third season of Glow on the same stages where we used to shoot Mad Men.
Is that so strange?
It was strange because we were at the same studio, LA Center Studios, and like on the exact same stages. Right. It more gave me an appreciation for our art department and the people who build these sets are extraordinary. Right. And you go, wow, this is just a big empty space. And for a while, it looked like my home in Cos Cob in the 60s. And now it looks like a hotel in Las Vegas in the 80s.
That's so interesting because Mad Men and Glow, they really are some of the most amazing period pieces like recently on television.
It's very lucky.
And the costume you drew in the wardrobe is so great.
Well, the other thing is that the head of our hair and makeup department, our Emmy nominated hair and makeup departments, it's the same women who did that on Mad Men. Yes. Lana Horchowski and Teresa Rivers.
That is fantastic. It is so cool to watch your career like one step after the next because I feel like you just keep getting killer shows.
It's luck. Well, I mean, Mad Men is basically one of the first jobs I ever did.
Amazing.
And so that was really lucky. Yeah. And Community was also, I mean, I feel like when I booked Community, even though I was already recurring on Mad Men, it was so early in my career and I would have taken any job.
Yeah.
I feel like the year that I auditioned for Community was like maybe my only real pilot season. And I could have just as soon done a show that was called $2 Beer. Like, you know what I mean? And that's I'm not making that up. But I got on Community, which was so lucky. And that cast, and it's fun to watch it again with Glow and to remember because I'm still close with my Community cast.
Also great ensemble cast throughout.
It's great ensembles. And it's truly like, I'm always wanting to stress to our Glow girls, like this is like lightning in a bottle. It's so special. Think there's hundreds of shows, especially now on television. And like that magic that happens sometimes is just that. It's really magical.
It comes through. As I said, I'm halfway through the third season. I feel like there's a lot of shows you watch the first season, the second season, then you kind of fall off.
And like,
I'm still loving Glow. It's so great.
I'm so glad. That's such a testament to Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch, who created the show. And their writing is incredible. And also, they just want to push boundaries. They don't ever want to tread the same water twice. And people will come in. They've had, you know, I think that writers will pitch like, oh, this episode, the show within a show was so fun last season. Should we do something like that again? And they're like, why we already did it. Let's not be boring.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But I mean, it just seems so scary. Like they set themselves up where anything could happen. We're reinventing the wheel every season.
Yeah.
It makes it a huge job.
As a viewer, that's so exciting. That's what's like you want to, because you get bored otherwise. There's too many shows.
Exactly.
Like that's really exciting. And I'm glad the show's
and
in Vegas.
And as actors, definitely. Yeah, where we continue to be like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. Congrats on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Guest is an Academy Award-winning actress you know from such films as Thelma and Louise and A League of Their Own. Her documentary, This Changes Everything, will be in select theaters Friday and on demand August 16th. Please welcome to the show Gina Davis, everyone. Hello.
Hi.
I'm so happy you're here.
Me too.
This is really impressive. You started, independent of this documentary, a research institute, yes?
Yeah.
To study gender in media.
Yeah.
What gave you that idea, and how do you even go about starting something like that?
Right. I didn't know, but it was because when my daughter was a toddler, I sat her down to watch preschool shows and videos and things. And the very first thing I watched, I noticed there were far more male characters than female characters. And I thought, you know, in the 21st century, surely by now we should be showing kids that boys and girls share the sandbox equally. And it was in everything. And then, just like I said, I didn't in that clip, I didn't intend to make it my life's mission. But since nobody was noticing it, I decided I'm going to get the data, and then I can go directly to the creators and share it with them in a private way, you know, in a friendly way. You didn't know this, but But wow, and they were horrified, and
because they genuinely thought it had changed, yes,
they absolutely, definitely thought it was different. And very often it was weird because very often they would name a movie with one female character as proof that gender inequality was fixed, and it was because it was an important character.
Right.
Like, very often people would say, "Well, there's been Belle." So yeah. Now everything is completely different now that we've had Belle. So.
They were like, yeah, well, we had to. Yeah. You had to have a beauty. Like, you know, pat yourself on the back so hard.
Right.
How'd you get involved in the documentary?
So Tom Donahue, the director, had been working on it for a little while, actually. He was inspired to do this from his own experiences figuring out that he was a feminist and realizing that men have to be part of the solution to this problem. So he'd been shooting it for a while and then heard about my research. He decided, I really want to get some research in this thing. And he heard about my institute and I came on board. And so, yeah.
And so the title, This Changes Everything, is personal to you because it's the sort of thing you were hearing after Thelma and Louise, after A League of Their Own.
That's right.
And what was it, why were you hearing that, and what made you want to make it the title of the documentary?
So, we know when Thelma and Louise came out, it caused a big stir, and it was in the press everywhere, but a lot of commentators said, this will change everything. Now there's going to be so many more movies with female stars, because it struck such a nerve, and then after League of Their Own, it was like, there's going to be so many more sports movies with women. And we know how many of those have come out in the past 25 years. So, but I believed it. It sounded great. And yay, I got to be in a movie that's changing everything. That's
right.
So awesome. And then nothing, and then nothing, and nothing. But then every 5 years or so, something comes out. Hunger Games comes out, whatever. Well, now everything is different now. And it never is.
And basically, your data shows, certainly in the role of when you look at something like female directors, it's about as bad as it's always been. Even
right.
though I think if you ask people, they would say because of, you know, Wonder Woman or whatnot,
right.
they'd think,
right.
oh, no, it's better now. It's probably right. close to 50-50.
There's been none progress. It's like...
Now, that's a data term you're using there.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Sorry,
that's very scientific.
Sometimes use technical terms. I'm sorry. You couldn't even say, well, in 500 years we'll reach parity, because there's none...
It's so incremental as to...
There's nothing. There's no progress at all. It's not even glacial.
One of the things you point out is this gender bias is often unconscious.
Right.
And is that one of the things that you try to do both with your documentary and your research, is that if there's maybe just a consciousness around it, that would be the way that it would change? Because obviously, as you point out, a lot of people, you know, probably good-minded people are walking around thinking
yes.
progress is happening.
Right, exactly. Well, here's what I think. I think I figured out that for the on-screen representation, the data really is the magic key because they had no idea. I mean, they knew they're making fewer movies with a female lead character. But when you talk about the body of the movie is nearly empty of female presence, they're like, wow, what did I do? Why did I do that? And so they want to make the change. But behind the camera seems like a completely different problem because everybody has known for decades how few female writers, directors, and producers there are. And nobody said, what? What am I doing? I must change this.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. You know, they're like, no, I know I don't hire women. I'm probably going to keep doing that.
You, I do want to talk about the two films you mentioned because they're so enduring. They hold up so well. They really are perfect movies. Thelma and Louise, people will still, I imagine, still come up to you. And is it true that sometimes people will say that they reenact the movie?
I've had many people say, my friend and I acted out your trip. And I'm like, which part? It's like, was it when we killed the guy or hold up a liquor store, evade the law, or kill ourselves? Which part?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Like my friend went the whole way. I only did most of the movie.
Yeah. I jumped out of the car.
Yeah, I jumped out of the car. I mean, I'm not crazy. And then League of Their Own, Rosie was here recently, and we were talking about the film, because obviously it's so sad that we lost Penny Marshall, who, you know what, again, when you talk about representation, that film really had it, it was Penny Marshall's movie, and, obviously a female-driven film. What are your memories of that film and working with Penny and that cast?
It was terrific fun to have, to be with so many women. I mean, it's so unbelievably rare. Even doing Thelma and Louise was rare because there were two of us. And, so then to be surrounded by women was super fun. The weird thing is, almost every interviewer who came to the set asked, so is there a lot of cat fighting going on? Is there a lot of meow, meow? And I'm like, what century are you from? What is wrong with you? But people have this crazy assumption about women that we don't get along. We love each other. We really support each other.
I make this assumption about actors of any gender who are in sports movies. I assume that they played the sport, but you did not. Is it true that you were not in any way, shape, or form a baseball player?
Oh, not only that, but not any sport. I was very tall and gangly, and I was sure that I was uncoordinated, and so I was very physically shy. And the girls' high school basketball team was constantly trying to recruit me, and I said, I don't know how to play basketball. And they said, just stand there. You're the tallest girl in the whole area, in the county. So I had to learn, because, you know, I'm only playing the best baseball player anyone has ever seen.
Yeah.
I only hit home runs in the movie.
Yeah.
But I would do the mighty swing, and then the props guys had a giant slingshot. But to give myself a little credit, I did really learn how to play baseball.
How to throw a baseball. Well. And who was the final judge of whether it was convincing? Did Penny, when you auditioned, did Penny have you throw a baseball? Did she want to see? Or
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
She just kind of hired you and figured you would figure it out
on
your own.
I'd worked it out. Yeah.
Well, she made the right decision. And then you're going to be, this is exciting too, and obviously while we're talking about both sports and female representation, you're going to be in season 3 of GLOW,
yes,
which is great.
That's
and
right.
How has that experience been?
Thank you. Super fun.
Yeah.
Super fun. I think that comes out also on Friday.
Oh, that's what a big week for you.
I know.
Yeah.
It's incredible. it was really fun. Talk about a lot of women, you know, in front of and behind, everywhere. It's women and so much fun. I was a huge fan of that show, so I was really happy.
And lastly, I want to say, this is really exciting. You're getting the Gene Herschelt Humanitarian Oscar. Based on what you're doing here. Now, you... I want to ask, you have you won an Oscar.
Yes.
An acting Oscar for Accidental Tourist.
That's right.
And so is it nice now knowing in advance you're going to get the Oscar? You don't have to go through any of the stress of waiting that night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
I can't imagine how nice that is to, like, the whole day you know you're going to win an Oscar.
Well, for now, for weeks and months, I get to know I'm getting an Oscar.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
That's really exciting and well-deserved, and I look forward to that. And thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gina Davis, everybody.
Hey, this is Kevin. We are backstage with Gina Davis. Hi, Gina. Hi.
Thanks for taking a few more questions backstage here.
I'm thrilled to do it.
You were talking to Seth about your institute and the research in finding how unrepresented females are in Hollywood. In the documentary, it talks about how you partnered with Google to do this face recognition software. Can you talk about that a little bit and how many films you've gone through and the process of that?
Right. Google sponsored the development of this software, which was done at USC Viterbi School of Engineering by Sri Narayan. And what it does is use voice recognition and face recognition and AI to give us information that would never be possible with the human eye. So not only can it tell you how many female characters there are and that kind of thing, but how much screen time do they have, mm-hmm. and how much do they talk? Mm-hmm. And one thing we found that was so interesting was when there's a female lead of the movie, she's on screen and talks half the time as when there's a male lead in a movie. So it's like they don't even trust that she's interesting enough to be on screen.
Yeah.
It has to be half as much. But we've looked at, I think, 3 or 4 years now, the top 100 movies. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating stuff. Yeah.
One of the goals has been to speak directly to content creators, yes. about making these changes. Have there been a lot of people who have been receptive to it or promising to make changes? Or what's that experience been for you?
You know, it's been incredibly positive. I decided from the beginning that I wanted to use the data to go directly and privately to the creators of kids' media rather than try to educate the populace. You know, it seemed like the most impactful use of my time would be to try to influence the people making it, and then the people don't even need to rise up and demand more female characters. So from the first meeting I took in 2006 until the one we did last week, it's pretty much the same. Their jaws are on the ground. They had no idea they were leaving out that many female characters. And very often the learning how bad they're doing in that area is enough to make them want to change. We have yet to leave any meeting where somebody hasn't said, you just changed my project. And a lot of stuff has come out on TV and movies that we know that that we impacted. So it's really
FX
rewarding.
Being one of the networks that is talked about in the documentary, and John Landgraf, who it was brought to his attention and has been receptive to doing this and bringing, you know, not just inclusion but diversity to the network.
Well, you know, yeah, and in his case, there was an article, I think, in the LA Times, where this woman researched how many female directors were on different networks, and evidently FX came in last, the worst, and he was so shocked by that. He had no idea. It's like, what? I thought I was doing a good job. And so, unlike a lot of people, he said, I'm just going to change this. And now, you know, it's a very feted network with so many nominations all the time. And it's exciting. I mean, it just proves that what you have to do is just decide you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Most movies are written by men. And certainly, I'm sure the vast majority of my movies have been written by men. And I think I never thought about it that much until I started all this other inquiry into the inequality. And I mean, men can do this too. Men can really, you know, Ridley Scott directed Thelma Louise. Mm-hmm. And you can't say it would have been better if it had been a woman. I mean, he did a fantastic job. But Kelly Khoury wrote the script. And I think there's things in there that a man just wouldn't think of. So we have been forced pretty much to play a man's idea of what a woman is rather than a woman's idea. Yeah. So pretty much all movies are through the male gaze, as they call it, and we get very few with the female gaze.
Well, I hope that changes quickly.
And this movie will change everything.
That's right. Let's hope so. Yeah. Gina, thank you so much for being here, and come back again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Hold up. Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.